Introduce our first speaker, Ellen.
Hi, family. My name is Ellen, and I'm an addict. First of all, I want to give thanks to my high power for getting me here. Second, I want to thank the program committee for asking me to come to share my experience, strength, and hope on humility. You know, when they first asked me to do this, and then they told me the time, I was like, how am I going to stay awake? But needless to say, when it got closer and closer to the time to come here, I got wide awake, you know? So now I'm like, yeah. And then on the way here, someone offered me some candy. I was like, I don't think so. You know, I kind of reflected back, you know, on my life before I got here. And it was truly a mess, you know, and it wasn't until I asked for some help, I realized how much of a mess my life had become. And once I admitted, you know, that I had a problem, I was able to achieve a glimpse of humility. You know, humility is just getting honest with yourself. You know, being able to have a little bit more clarity to see yourself, you know, and that kind of like, you know, brought me here because I was able, since I've been here, to look at myself. You know, I was born and raised in D.C. I have a sibling who's in these rooms. Matter of fact, was the one who prayed me up in these rooms. And needless to say, we did a lot of things together, you know. And, you know, he's very protective over me, so he would always tell me, you know, before you try it, bring it to me. Let me make sure it's all right for you. Needless to say, there were a lot of times I didn't bring his stuff to him to have him try it first, you know. I was raised in a normal, fairly nearly home. My parents did the best that they could, you know, but I was the one that kind of strayed on the path. I remember when I was little and the family would get together and my aunts and uncles would come in the house one way, but by the end of the night, they was walking out another way, and my curiosity. So I really wanted to know what was in those drinks. I really wanted to know what did the happy juice taste like? You know, and he used to say, you know, in my family, you know, especially the young ladies, you know, we always the ones who had to clean up, take the dishes to the kitchen to help out the older ladies, you know. So before I brought the glasses into the kitchen, I tried the happy juice, you know, and that was my first substance. And he used to say my addiction took off from there. You know, I started to use as early as junior high school, you know, marijuana progressing to everything else. You know, on the way down here, I was speaking with my sponsees, and we were talking about different types of drugs that we used. And it brought back the memories of, you know, using Purple Haze, Pink Hearts, Robin Eggs, okay, Black Beauties. I said in the rooms, huh? Are we identifying or what? You know, and that's where my addiction took me. You know, and I remember doing all the things literature said. And new towns and new lovers, you know. My mother was very sick most of my young life, in and out of hospitals, and she died. I was only 20 years old. And then from then on, my addiction really took off because I took on a whole lot of anger, a whole lot of resentment, abandonment issues, you know. And needless to say, I moved to Atlanta. Again, the new towns and new lovers. And again, my addiction took off. And needless to say, this sibling got a hold of these rooms, got a little, you know, a little time under his belt, and kept calling me. And I just wasn't ready. I just was not ready, you know. And he used to say while he was there, because we had a family reunion in Atlanta. And while he was there, he was able to get some phone numbers. So remember, no matter where you go, there's a meeting. And when I asked and called for help, finally, these people came to my rescue. And then I got in touch with Narcotics Anonymous. I was able to start seeing some direction in my life, you know. I was able to start to see myself for who I really was. And I found out that all I had was just for today. You know, they told me to get a sponsor, don't use, and go to meetings. And I did that. But I just was not ready for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. So I went back down there and experienced a little bit more pain and misery. So by the time I got back here to D.C., my butt on fire, you know, my sibling had to call my father and ask him to drag and bring me back home, screaming and kicking. You know, and I'll never forget that last run. You know, it was cold, it was miserable. And I just remember saying a prayer and asking God, please help me. I need some help. And needless to say, February 16th, 1990, I have not found it necessary to use. I don't say that to brag or boast, but I say that to keep my story in front of me. And when I got back to D.C., the sibling introduced me to these rooms. And everyone kept coming up to me. Oh, congratulations. You're here. Welcome. Please keep coming back. Oh, you're the sister. So you're the one we've been praying for. I now understand what they mean about praying for that newcomer, praying for that still suffering addict when we get in the circle, because that was me one day, you know. So when I got here, I was able to get some direction. I was able to take a look at me. You know, not only was I able to take a look at me, I was able to change and deal with me. You know, I got a sponsor. I got a home group. I was introduced to the Steps of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was able to do 1, 2, and 3, which are my foundation steps, you know, to help me further myself on into the 4th and 5th step, to be honest with myself and take a look at me. You know, I remember when I got the 4th step guide, because some of the literature wasn't even out when I did my first 4th step. And when I got the guide, I thought the guide was this thick, y'all. But when actually what it was only this thick, y'all. But when you look at it, you know, it took me from childhood to adolescence to adulthood. So I was able to see the patterns of my behavior. And you're talking about having humility. You know, that was my first glimpse of humility for me. You know, because I had to honestly keep taking a look at me, you know, see what part that I played in all the situations in my life, good, bad, or indifferent. And with that, I was able to share the experience with my sponsor. And I truly, truly was learning to become humble, you know, because they say that humble is the best state for an addict to be in. And I'm really learning to learn how to be like that today. Because humility has been playing a great part in my life over the last 3 years. You know, they say that we're not to confuse humility with being humiliated. Humiliated, you can feel worthless, ashamed. You know, but when we're talking about humility, we're talking about sitting down and looking honestly at yourself and seeing the growth in yourself. You know, being able to peel away those layers. Most importantly, letting go of that ego. You know, no longer being in denial about self. Because I realized I no longer had, I couldn't be in denial anymore about me. I had to take that mask off. Because, see, when I was out there, y'all was a big-time chameleon. You know, always wanted to fit in, always wanted to be a part of. You know, I always was a people pleaser, you know, because, you know, like, you know, when you're out there in the streets, you know, you have traditions and steps out there in the streets, just like you have here in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. So I learned real quickly about the steps and traditions out there in the streets to survive. So when I got here, you know, they gave me some more steps and more traditions to live by. And today I live by those, you know. I was able to look at myself honestly and clearly see who I really am. That's humility, you know, because I've been here, you know, a few 24 hours, and the God of my understanding has helped me to understand the difference between humility and being humble. I remember my first result of being humiliated was doing my first four step. You know, I had started that thick book, you know, and just wasn't really ready to finish it. And you know what they tell you about that fourth step? If you put it away in the dark, it's going to fester. And it did, you know. And needless to say, the God of my understanding said, okay, since you're going to put it away, let me tell you what I'm going to do for you. And what happened was I got in a head-on car collision. And I'll never forget, because I had just signed up for the World Convention in Baltimore, my first World Convention. And I got into a head-on car collision. And you're talking about being humiliated, because now I had to sit home with self and deal with self. And that was very humiliating for me, because I had to sit still with me and take a look at me. You know, I know a few years ago, I got so involved with my sponsees, with work, school, my husband. One more time, got to humiliate it. I took the focus off of me. And trust me, that was a very humiliating experience, you know. Because they say that, you know, they put people in your life for a reason, and maybe for a season or for a lifetime. But at that time, I know these people were only put in my life for a reason. Because God removed these people in my life because he wanted me one more time to take a look at me. Humility. And I had to seriously take a look at me, because I just wasn't doing right, being right. Remember, my relationships weren't going good. And it was a hard experience for me, because one more time I had to sit still with me. And it wasn't easy, you know. And then since then, I started another round of steps with my sponsor. And I've truly become humble today. Because I honestly sit here with all these people in these rooms, strangers, half of y'all I've never seen in my life before, and share my experience, strength, and hope, and be honest about who I really am. You know, because I really, really and truly never wanted y'all to know my business. Because I was always a very secretive person. I really never wanted y'all to know really all about me. Because I'm very self-reliant. I suffer from low self-esteem and low self-worth, you know, and very self-reliant. And it was real hard for me when I got here, and especially for women, two women, to ask for help. Because I've always done everything on my own, for myself. I would be up against the wall and a rock before I'd ask for help. You know, and that to me was the hardest thing to do. One more time, being humble. And that was real difficult for me. So God put these people in my life, my sponsees, my sponsor, to help me. You know, to come outside myself and share honestly about me and who I really am. And today I can do that. And it's okay. Hell, all y'all know my story. That's why I'm here now. You know? But I'm truly blessed with this gift of recovery. You know, when I did a 6 and 7 step, it was truly an awakening for me, because it really let me know that the God of my understanding is truly in control. And it was the steps to help me to become more willing to work on me and allow the God of my understanding to work in my life. And then with my shortcomings, which are just human traits kind of turned upside down, you know, that I was able to truly have some being very humble. You know, it was a very humbling experience when someone just asked me to be a part of, and especially when they asked me to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope. Very humbling experience for an addict like me. You know, I have my home group is Step Meeting in Traditions, and I truly love this home group because they have truly taught me a whole lot. You know, it's the one place that I can go and share honestly about me. And I can honestly say that all those people in the room really, truly know me and have helped me due to the fact that things that I've been through over the last couple of years and becoming a lot more humble today because I'm able to see me now. I'm able now to have healthy relationships because of my humility. I'm able to see the parts that I've played in the things that happened to me over the last few years, and it has not been easy. It has been a hardship for me. A lot of emotions, a lot of heartbreak, but most importantly, I didn't use. And it wasn't about using for the first time in my life. It just, no matter what, it just wasn't about using for me today. But what it was about was taking a look at me and honestly seeing myself for who I really am. I'm not that bad. I already told you I suffer from low self-esteem, low self-worth, very self-reliant, controlling. And I know everything, y'all. I mean, I know everything. But you know what? You know, ego is easing God out. And I've done that enough in my life, and I'm not trying to do that today. I have a closer contact with my higher power, and I allow him to do for me what I can't do for myself. And if you're a newcomer in here, give yourself a chance. Don't use. Get a sponsor, and most importantly, remain humble, else you will be humiliated. I know, and it's not an easy thing. I'm just so grateful for you people, because my life has gotten so much better, one day at a time. You know, I went on with the rest of the steps. I wrote that list, made amends when possible, check myself every day, because they have a bad forked tongue, and I will lash out at you so badly, and then want to come back and make an amends. So I'm learning not to fork my forked tongue out, you know. I pray and meditate every day. I always get up a few minutes early, get to just for the day, and sit down and meditate. You know, because I have road rage. I live 10 minutes from work, but rush hour takes me 25 minutes. I still think I can make it to work in 10 minutes, y'all. Trust me when I tell you this. But it's getting better. Because what I found out is, you know, seeing a lot of accidents on the way to work, and I said to go, oh, but the grace of God, that's not me today. Talking about being humble. Because that could be me. And I know why God puts people in my life for a reason, maybe just for that season. Because some mornings he be putting them little old ladies right in front of me. You talking about being humble. But that one more time, I have to take a look at me. It's gotten better, y'all. So if y'all see that little red Mazda going down North Capitol, just check on me, y'all, okay? You know? But it has gotten better. You know, I was kind of angry at first to the God, if my God, my understanding, because I was going to say, why are you removing these people out of my life? I love these people. They were so dear to me. And I love these people, too. You know, but what I found out is, the God, my understanding, it's time to do some more work on you, Ellen. That's why. They were only there for a reason. Don't question me why. But they were just there to get you through what you needed to get through at that time. And today I'm understanding that because I was so hurt behind that. I was so hurt. My 12-step, you know, that sibling that I told y'all about went back out. I had to do a 12-step on him. You're talking about being humble. I was just grateful that I was still here to help him now. You know, now what goes around comes around, and I understand that today, you know. And he's still here by the grace of God, and I love him to death. You know, all I can say is, most importantly, don't use. Get a sponsor. And if you're not quite sure that you want to be here, just keep coming back. Because that's what they told me. And remember, being humble is the best state any addict can be in. And if no one's told you today I love you, I'm going to keep coming back. And Speedy, I love you. Thank you for letting me share.
Sharon, I'm an addict. We'd like to thank Ellen for sharing her experience, strength, and hope. And we're going to have our second speaker now, Mark.
My name is Mark, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Mark.
I guess y'all can tell from the deep breath I'm a little nervous. I want to thank CPRCNA committee for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. Definitely want to thank the God of my understanding for making this possible, and Ellen for her lead. We kind of met out in the hallway, and we decided that she would go first, right? Trying to practice some humility, of course, you know. And I really enjoyed what you had shared. And, you know, of course, when I was given the topic, of course, now my awareness is really up, right, about humility. And I'm watching every little thing that I do, every little thing that I say, seeing where I'm right, seeing where I'm wrong, and blah, 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 right? And, you know, I was thinking on the way down, you know, it's something real serene about driving down here. And it gives me a chance to reflect on my story. You know, I came down here on Thursday, you know, because I wanted to beat all the police that was going to stop everybody that they did today, right? So, because I know I like getting speeding tickets sometimes, you know, so I learned to come down here a day ahead of time. Anyway, you know, I was kind of reflecting back on my story, and, you know, I grew up in the D.C. area. I'm originally from New York. I came to D.C. when I was about 5 years old, you know, and it was just my mother and myself. And, you know, in the neighborhood that I grew up in, you know, everybody had brothers and sisters, and I didn't. You know, I later found out in life that I did have a sister, and I'll talk about her in a minute or so. But I didn't really have any role models. That's really what I'm trying to say. There wasn't a man in the household, you know. So my so-called role models became those people on the street, you know. And she was talking about, I'm going to try to speak over the karaoke thing because I'll get to sharing the rhythm, right, you know. And like I said, I didn't really have any role models. It was the people on the street. Now, my mom, what she did, she recruited my uncles. You know, I had that one uncle who would show me how to hang up my pants, you know, how to brush my hair, how to brush my teeth, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had that other uncle who I would play Hot Wheels with, but eventually would show me how to get high, you know. So it was kind of hard to balance the two, right? But I found I liked the uncle who was teaching me how to get high. You know, that's the guy I wanted because we were, you know, closer in age and everything. But, you know, as y'all told me that the problem started long before I started using, right? You know, one of the things I thought about, I was in the service, right? And I just graduated from AIT or something. I was getting ready to go overseas. Now, Ellen was talking about, you know, the micro dot, the purple haze, you know, the acid and the speed and all of that. And in D.C., there was this place called the Clubhouse. I think it was on 13th and D Street, Northwest or something like that, right? That was back in the days of Enchantment, was it Blue Magic and all of them. You know, so anyway, I was coming home, man, but my self-centeredness wanted to go see my sister before I went back, right? But my uncle, the one that taught me how to get high, he was waiting on me, right? But I'm like, I'm going to do what I want to do, you know. And I said, I'll catch up to them. So later on that night, after leaving my sister, I went on ahead and I caught up with my uncle, or they caught up with me, and he had a young lady with him, right? And she cursed me out, but she used this real big word, right, that I got real attached to. She said, "You're an arrogant bastard." And what I clinged on to was arrogant. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm something. Yeah, I'm something. Because I've been trying to find my way all this time, you know. I mean, because, like I said, I didn't have any role models. So when she said arrogant, I had never heard that before. I said, yeah, that must be something there. I'm arrogant, yeah. An arrogant bastard, you damn right. Shit. Because what it was, I wasn't being humble. I held up what they had planned for me to do. You know, they're going to take me to this clubhouse. We're going to see Enchantment and whoever else it was. And I said, well, I'm just apologizing to my uncle and nobody else. And that's when she made that statement. But what I found was, I thought the word was so cool that I used it throughout my life. You know, that arrogance. And the arrogance was to keep y'all or to make y'all think that I was confident, that I was all right with me, you know, that I wasn't scared of anything. But for real, I was very fearful. And a lot of times, as y'all can hear, I have a deep voice. A lot of times, in my fear, yeah, my voice would get a little bit deeper. Yeah, 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 uh-huh, yeah. What? Yeah, uh-huh, yeah, yeah. You know, so it was things like that that I found that was helping me to survive, you know. And, of course, you know, it just went on and on. And the disease is so tricky. I mean, you know, I didn't realize what was going on back then, but I can remember going to the crack man's house on payday. I mean, I did this routine over and over again, and many times, right? And this old timer taught me, you know, he said he uses the term soft clothes. I was working at Howard University. And I would get off on payday, and I would run over to his house, and I walk through the door with my arrogant bastard ass, right? I'm here, and I got plenty of money, and I want to treat everybody, right? Because I want y'all to think I am somebody. Because, see, in my story, I'm looking for acceptance, right? So I want y'all to think I'm somebody, you know? So I walk through the door, and I'm buying, and about 10 of us would be in his bathroom, right? About 3 people would be in the tub, 2 people would be near the toilet, right? Whoever could get near the sink would get near the sink. And sometime, if you're not careful, you'd be the person up against the wall with a towel rack, you know, trying to squeeze your way in, right? And that would go on for hours and hours and hours. And I would be the guy in there. Y'all be telling me to shut the fuck up because I'm messing up your high, you know, because I'm real intellectual when I'm high, right? And I'd be telling the guy, man, you know, you're going to kill yourself up there smoking all that shit. You know. So at night's end, you know, and what I observed was, you know, there were so many people that would sit around the guy whose house it was, right, and how they would cater to him, you know, and run to the store for him and wash the dishes for him and cook food for him. I'd be like, I ain't doing that until I ran out of money. Is there anything I can do for you, man? What's that you drink? Yeah, I'll go get it right now. And, you know, we would sit around the house, man, and what the guy would do, he would doze off. And then the girlfriend, she would get tired of looking at us. So what she would do, she'd toss everybody one, and she'd say, now get the fuck out. But I remember how humble I would be because I wanted her to toss me one because I was out of money, right? And I didn't want to go home because I had a wife there, and I knew she was going to question me, you know? But I repeated that same cycle over and over and over and over again. You know, and my real humbling experience for me was my last run. When that same ex-wife caught me butt naked with a, I found out since that time I was the trick, but there was a young lady in the house, you know, and I was butt naked. She had her clothes on, and that was a humiliating experience when the ex-wife walked, you know, bust through the door, and, you know, because I like to rearrange the furniture and all that stuff when, you know, when I'm doing things like that, and but the arrogance was, because when she bust through the door, she said, you know it's over, right? And I said, yeah, I know it's over. You know, of course I'm going to say that. You know, yeah, I know it's over. But a phone call came in, right? And that phone call, she said, phone's for you. And it was somebody I had forgot that I had called, you know. And I left out of the door and went to hang out with that young lady, man. And a strange thing happened. I couldn't get any higher. She didn't look any better. You know, she didn't look as good as she would normally look, right? And it was like, hey, let's go, right? It was like 7 o'clock in the morning. And we started walking back. And once I walked into her door, what was happening, what I found out since being in recovery, I was going through something called a crash landing. And my my life just kind of flashed before my eyes. And when I got home, so I always clung on to my ex-wife standing in that house, right? And she packed up all of her clothes, and she left. And when I saw them clothes folded up in the floor, I knew it was over. So when she walked out the door, I knew it was over at that point. And I recall, in my most humblest state, being on the floor snotting, crying, asking the God of my understanding for some help, you know. And he heard that prayer, and I heard you say you had a praying sibling. I had a praying mother. You know, my praying mother was like, baby, if you take one step, God will take two. And then, you know, I get introduced to you people, right? And I was reading in the literature where it says that we start practicing humility in the first step, right? And it took me a long time to admit that I was powerless because I kept trying to stop them on. I was one of those people when the birthday came, this is my last one, you know. When New Year's Eve came, I'm quitting on New Year's Day, you know. Oh, it's your birthday? I'm quitting after your birthday, you know. And I did that. I did that many a time over and over and over again, you know. And, you know, the steps, as I stay in recovery, the steps take on a higher meaning. Let me say it like that. It takes on a higher meaning. And and I keep referring to Ellen, what she was saying about getting honest with self. Excuse me, she was talking about getting honest with self. And I didn't want to do that for a long time because, you know, it's easy to practice humility in the rooms. It's real easy to do that. You know, when y'all ask me to pick up the chairs, I pick up the chairs. When y'all ask me to, you know, speak at a meeting, I'm going to speak at a meeting. If you ask me to be in service, I'm going to be in service. But what about when y'all don't see me? You know, what kind of humility am I practicing then, right? Because it's one thing for me to get on the phone and talk to my sponsor. Man, I went out there and messed up today, man. You know, I did something I had no business doing. But am I willing, and I may even take it a little bit further and talk to the God of my understanding about it, but am I willing to come in here and unpeel it with you all, right? The liturgy also talks about being able to take a suggestion from somebody else, put it this way. Y'all see me better than I see me. Am I really going to take the suggestion when you give it to me? Or am I going to say, what the fuck wrong with you? You know, why are you talking about me? You know, and that may be my reaction. That may be my reaction, right? But what I've learned since being here is I want to stay here. You know, so when I get home, you know, I kind of go over it, you know, think about it for a minute. Then I'm real curious. I'm going to go and I'm going to ask somebody else, do you think I act like that? Do I really do that? Damn. Okay, now it's time to go and practice, you know, the sixth and the seventh step now, you know. And it's amazing that the seventh step is right there in the middle. I like to refer to it as the pivotal point in recovery, right? You know, and I've gotten a lot of help. I've gotten a lot of help from newcomers, to be honest, because I've been watching them because y'all told me this program is 90% observation, right? But I'm going to go back. There's somebody in this room now, right, who I watch. And what I notice about him, this is what I mean, I can practice it in the rooms real easy. And what I notice about him is he always reaches out to the newcomer. And y'all told me early on, because I don't hear this really being said anymore, but y'all told me this, if I want what you have, I have to do what you do, right? So what I notice is he'll always reach out to the newcomer. He'll say, Mark, this is so-and-so. Mark, this is so-and-so. You know, y'all, my friends, they know who I'm talking about, right? And what I found myself doing is emulating him. I make it my business to reach out to a newcomer. Right, I make it my business to do that, but a lot of times my spiritual conditioning is not there. And one of those times is at the end of the meeting, somebody say, "Mark, which way you going? Can you give me a ride?" I'm like, "God damn, yeah, man, I can give you a ride." But at what point do I freely and willingly give that person a ride? Whether it's out of my way or whether it's going in the same direction I'm going in, you know. And most of the time, the people that ask me for a ride, I'm going their way. But it's something about that disease on the inside. I was just watching William P. Shedd when he said that thing crawl up the arm, that disease, you know you don't want to get that man a ride. But what I feel is that, you know, the God of my understanding, I'm learning this as being here, what I'm feeling that the God of my understanding didn't bless me with those things just for me to be selfish with it. Because, see, my character defects is I am selfish. I am self-centered. I am arrogant. You know, and most of all, I'm fearful. Right? I want everybody to like me, but the problem is I won't like me. You know, so I have to keep coming back so y'all can tell me how to love me. I had to ask y'all several times how do I love me? What do I do? And y'all have given me some simple stuff, right? But I think the best thing y'all ever told me was change I must or die I will. And now I'm at a point in my recovery where I want to change because my prayers have changed because God has blessed me with things. God has blessed me with people, right? But now my prayers have gone to, God, I want to be of maximum service for you. What can I do for you today? You know, and sometimes I mean it, and sometimes I don't. But y'all said practice these principles in all our affairs, right? And then y'all also let me know in the literature that I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm going to fall short. But then again, the God that I know about, right, he expects me to fall short. One, because he wants me to keep coming to him. He wants me to keep coming to him because I kept going to the crack, man, without question. I kept going when I ain't had no money. You know, and he kept giving it to me, too. You know, he kept giving it to me, you know. So, and I don't see that God of my understanding. I think I heard my man say that. I don't see that God of my understanding being that fire and brimstone God anymore. That one that you were so wrong on, I'm going to kill you right now. I was fearful of that. I'm so glad y'all told me that all that God had to be was a loving and caring God. Right now, I see him that way. And I'm hoping I'm not offending anybody, but that's my God. You got to get your own. I'm sorry. You know, now I was talking about how I do that in the rooms. Now, what about outside the rooms? You know, a little while back, my sibling, I found out when I was 20 years old that I had a sister. I found out when I was 20 years old that I had a father. Actually, I had a father, right? And our father passed, it's almost 3 years ago, and there was some money distributed to my sister. I got angry about it because everybody knew about it except me, right? I was expecting, of course, to get some money out of that deal. And really not even money, just mention it. No, let me be honest. Hell yeah, I wanted some money. Shit. I wanted some money. Damn, I'm your brother. You know, so it was a family member. It was someone outside of the family that my sister decided to share this money with, right? And that person outside of the family was using me as a go-between. They needed me because they wanted to make sure they got theirs, right? Once they got theirs, I was no longer needed, so you know I was hurt. Because I already suffered from them abandonment issues, you know. So now you don't need me anymore. You know, now you're not as kind to me anymore. Now you're not calling me anymore. But now I'm really taking my anger out of my sister. How dare you? That was our father, right? But you good people come up one more time. Damn you N.A. people. Y'all said she will be your sister no matter what. No matter what. Because y'all come up with these ideas like pray for people for 30 days. And all. But because I want to stay here, because I'm trying to change, I did that. And my sister was going through a situation, right? She was saying she couldn't pay her rent, didn't have a car note money and all of that. And here come the acid test right here, right? But I found that God was doing for me what I wouldn't do for myself. And he was also blessing me at the same time. And y'all told me the only way to keep what I have is to give it away. So without question, my sister was she was in need. And I was able to step outside of me and meet her. And help her with her need, right? And I'm like, damn, did I do that? Right? The blessing is, out of that first step, because y'all told me to help her, because she's always going to be my sister. Friends, family members, money, nothing will ever come between us, right? We have a great relationship today. Girlfriend calls me, now she's getting on my damn nerve. But I love her to death, right? Another person is my mother. My mother was the person who would ask me, did I have any life insurance, because she didn't have any money to bury me. Today she says she's my biggest fan, you know, because, You know, we didn't have the greatest relationship. Well, actually, we did. We had a real good relationship. Let me say it like that. But there wasn't all of that, you know, hugging and stuff like that. You know, and I heard you talk about that earlier. There wasn't all that loving, I mean, hugging and all that stuff. And but I realized that this is my mother, and she did the very best that she could do for me, you know. And now it's my time to give it back to her. You know what I'm saying? So for her to tell me that she's my biggest fan, man, girlfriend got it twisted. I'm her biggest fan, you know, because the ladies in my life are very important, and I always share about them. And I think the last person I'm going to share about as far as family goes is my daughter. This is a young lady I would leave with my friends because I had to go get high. I just had to go smoke that rock. I just had to do that, right? And it was my weekend to have her, right? So she would come over. And we got all this great stuff planned. We're going to go eat crabs, and we're going to go to the movies, and et cetera, et cetera. We wouldn't make it past going. We wouldn't make it past going because I would drop her off. My buddies would end up watching her overnight. So, you know, basically I damaged the relationship, you know. Excuse me. And I learned a lot from my daughter. I learned an awful lot from my daughter. I have learned to let my daughter be her. Girlfriend is 27 years old. I used to, you know, in trying to build a relationship back up, I wanted to guide her, so to speak. And my daughter told me years ago, she said, Dad, you know, you have to kind of let me learn from my own experiences. I'm like, no, you ain't learning from your own experience. I'm trying to give you some shortcuts so you don't have to go bump your head, you know. But today, what I was looking for from that young lady, man, because, you know, when I'm using, I'm not thinking about being daddy. I'm not thinking about being son. I'm not thinking about being employee, cousin, or anything like that. You know, but since being here, one of my dreams have been for my daughter to call me daddy, because she would call me him. She would call me Mark, you know, Papa. And about 3 years ago, man, I got that blessing. She called me daddy, right? And that's all because of you people, right? But again, it's going back to that prayer. It's no longer about Mark. Now, I'm not perfect with that. I'm not perfect because I still get my self-centered moments. Okay, every day I have a self-centered moment. Let me just be honest, right? But that's why I come to meetings. You know, that's why I come to meetings. You know, and see, I listen to y'all. And I'm going to try to keep it on the outside of this for a minute, is that now if I'm practicing these principles, how well do I do it on my job? Right. And she was talking about she'd be going through that road rage. See, I go through that cool road rage. I'm not really trying to get in front of nobody once they jump in front of me. Right. But y'all should see my lips. And for the purpose of the tape, I put the bird up. You know, so there are areas I'm still practicing in. You know, because I find that I'm always in a hurry. Now, I have to be at work at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? I live about maybe 25 minutes away from the job, but damn if I don't get to the job 5 minutes after 3 every morning. One of them good government jobs, you know, one of them only jobs you can get away with that in, right? I'm aware of it, right? But, you know, I guess my self-centeredness is, well, as long as they let me get away with it, hell, I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah, I'm going to keep doing it. You know what I mean? And I wanted to complain about the money I was making. I really wanted to. Now, trust me, I'm making more money. And this is not bragging. This is not bragging. Believe me, I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life before. Right? Because when I came to this program, I had nothing. I mean, I came in here butterball, butt naked. Y'all told me, y'all had to tell me that the sum total of my life added up to zero when I got here. Now, I got a few things now. But then I had to think about it. Look where you came from, Mark. You were homeless, you know. That job you were on, you would be in that bathroom for hours on end, smoking crack, too paranoid to come out. They made a mistake and gave you a key. That meant I can go up there when I got ready to, you know. And you're still here to talk about it. You know, I'm not flipping cars over today. I don't flip two cars over and walked away from them. You know, that's only through God's grace, you know. So I have a lot of reasons to stay humble, but I can get real complacent and forget that. And that has happened to me within the last couple of years that I've become very complacent. And Ellen was talking about people being removed. And one of the things I need to share about, because somebody said when you get up here, you start getting honest. I have a tendency to use people, preferably women, right? And what happens is I want to get me some short-term pleasure for some long-term pain at the expense of another suffering addict or just another suffering person. But I'm the one that continues to get the pain afterwards. And my sponsor shares with me all the time. Because I'm a hard-headed addict, right? He shares with me all the time. If your conscience and your behavior are in agreement, you're okay. You're okay. There have been some times when the conscience and the behavior have been in two different places. And the deal is, I know before I even do what I'm getting ready to do, what the consequences are. But fuck it, I'm going to do it anyway because it's what I want. I'm not thinking about that person. It's what I want. See, that leads into misleading people, right? That leads into misunderstandings. And for an addict like me, it leads into confusion. I'm like, why won't she leave me alone? I knew it before I went into it, right? But the bottom line is I keep coming back because today I'm not afraid to tell on me. And that's what I'm doing right now. That's what you told me I had to get honest, right? Oh, okay, hell. See, and that's what I'm doing right now. I try to tell on my disease because the bottom line is I want to get better. But I don't think I would have gotten any of this had y'all told me I had to stop using first. Had y'all not told me that I had to stop using first. You know, I don't think I would have got any of this if y'all hadn't told me I need to get a sponsor. You know, I wouldn't have got any of this if y'all hadn't told me that I need to pray, right? And while I'm standing here, let me get a shameless plug in. I represent the South Potomac area. My home group is a closed Sunday group, and we're recovering our asses off over there. Am I right? Yeah, okay. I had to get that in right quick. And my clean date is March the 2nd, 1994. And I have not found any excuses. I have not found any reasons to use. Because y'all told me no matter what, come to a meeting. Share about it. No matter what, call your sponsor. Pray about it. You know, so I just want to, I don't know how much more time I have left, but I just want to share with the newcomer that this program works. I've been looking for this all my life, a place to belong, you know, friends, you know. The last thing I believe I'll share before I close it out is that in practicing humility and getting honest with myself, one of the things I have a problem with is truly forgiving people. Right? On the surface, I'll say I forgive you. But for real, I'm talking about your ass when you ain't looking. I'm talking about you. You know. How could you do that to me? Who do you think you are? And then what I'm looking for is some cosigners. Now, do you know what the hell she did? You know what he said? Yeah. But I'll get back to that person. Yeah, I forgive you, man. Everything cool. Everything all right. Now, even though we're sitting here laughing about it, right, there's a certain sickness to that shit. It keeps me sick in here. You know what I mean? So my prayer has been, God, let me forgive that person completely, fully, right? And what I found is the way to do that is to actually look the person in the face, to actually communicate with them, to speak to them, to call them up. You know, it doesn't mean that I have to be absolutely chummy, but it will work out in the long run. See, that's what happened with my sister. I started forgiving her. In turn, she started forgiving me, you know. And now, again, you know, we're family now, you know. So I'm trying to practice that in all of my affairs. I cannot tell y'all that I'm perfect with that. But I keep coming back because I believe we say progress, not perfection, right? I'm looking for the progress, and I can actually see some, you know, and saying this in closing, my sponsor told me before I came up here like a week ago, he said, Mark, don't think, share, right? And the nervousness is gone, because one thing I had to remember is that you all are not any better than I am. I'm not any better than you. We're all in here for one primary purpose. Right, and God got me smiling. Can I get like 10 more minutes? What's up? but you know, that's a perfect topic for me. That humility piece. That's really a perfect topic, because again, it is not about things anymore. It's about what I can do for somebody else. You know. Now y'all heard me say that. Don't all of y'all ask me for a ride when we leave up out of here, right? Look, Again, I want to thank you all for listening to me and asking me to be here. And I'm really enjoying this, man. I've had a ball today, man. God, just think we got two more days of this. You know what I'm saying? Because there's so much. And I think a young lady used the word, it's so powerful. This is powerful because I stood back and just watched everybody today, man. I'm like, look at this. All these addicts down here, we blending it. We ain't tearing up shit. Good, man. Yeah, man, I'm enjoying this, man. This is wonderful. But anyway, my name is Mark. I'm an addict. Thank you.